So my opening story is about a naval destroyer that was out at sea. And one day the captain of the naval destroyer was just strolling the deck when all of a sudden this sailor comes running to him, charging at him at full speed. And the sailor was in a real frenzy. He was exasperated. He was out of his mind. He was crazy. He could barely speak, put two words together. And he came up to the captain, and he just was trying to spit something out. He was just like, captain. And the captain just, at one point, just put his hands on the sailor's shoulders and gives him a gentle shake and says, "Hey, sailor, calm down. Relax. Take it easy. Everything's okay. Take a deep breath, and then whatever it is that you need to say, say it. Just sing it out." And you could see the tension start to leave the sailor, and he takes a deep breath, and he relaxes, and he sings. "Should all acquaintance be forgot and never brought to mind, the admiral's fallen overboard, and now he's a mile behind." So I guess I owe you a double apology this morning, one for the corny joke and the other one for my voice. But I really had to tell that story because it's very fitting for what we're talking about this week. And so if you were here last week, you heard Reverend Jan provide the groundwork for a process, basically a coded 2,000-year-old method for dealing with problems and issues that we may be confronted by in our lives. So regardless of what it is that might be plaguing you, whether it's physical, emotional, psychological, or spiritual, there is a hidden treasure in the Lazarus story that gives us a means, a way, if you will, that will help us overcome any difficult, threatening, or painful situation and help us maintain a better control over our lives. And then, of course, Reverend Jan invited you to come back this week because we start to get into the steps involved in the process in unlocking those secrets of the Lazarus blueprint. And I get to go first with the first step. And the name of our first step is the same as the title of our talk today, Turn Away. But I actually have come up with a subtitle, and that is, Don't Just Do Something, Stand There. And I hope that by the time I'm through with my talk, that begins to make a little bit of sense to you. The first step of the Lazarus principle, which very simply is turn away, is designed to free us up from that fear-based world that has a tendency to overwhelm us at times. And it's just intended to be a step that provides us some liberty, some space, so that we can move forward. And so we look at the beginning of the story of the Lazarus story from the Gospel of John. And what we learn is that Mary and Martha, two women who obviously had some bond, some relationship with Jesus, send a message to Jesus who was away in another town. And the message very simply is, our brother Lazarus is gravely ill and dying. And then the story goes on to tell us that having received the message, Jesus basically does nothing. And in fact, decides to stay in that town for another couple of days. Well, you know, you take a look at this and there really doesn't seem to be much there. So Jesus decides to stay put for another couple of days. What's the big deal? But to appreciate the significance of this text, it's important to have kind of a general understanding of the Gospels as a whole. Because the synoptic Gospels, you know, carrying the names of Matthew, Mark, and Luke, are Gospels that are rather detail-oriented, and they tell stories and they share circumstances which tend to suggest who this person of Jesus is. The Gospel, according to John, on the other hand, is not very much about suggesting as it is about proclaiming that Jesus indeed is the Messiah, the cosmic Christ, the Son of God. And so when there appears text in the Gospel of John that might seem superficial or trivial on the outside, you can be sure that it is there with some intended purpose. So what is the significance? What is the meaning of Jesus basically not reacting, doing nothing, and deciding to stay put for a couple of days? Or to look at it from a little different slant, if indeed Jesus is the Messiah, the Christ, what are we to take away from the meaning of that short text? The Lazarus blueprint describes Jesus' reaction or non-reaction as turning away. And please note, this is something that's very different to turning your back on something or trying to bury something by simply denying that it isn't real, that it doesn't exist. To turn away from something is to not give that something the power so that it will be able to overcome you or overwhelm you. Let me say it again because it's really significant. To turn away from something is to refuse to grant power to that something so as to allow it to overcome you and to overwhelm you. Your true reality is your Christ essence. And when you react to something out of fear or anger, in effect, what you are doing is you are elevating that something to be your truth. And this is something that runs contrary to the Christ nature of Jesus, and it runs contrary to the Christ nature of you as well. Because it's just inconsistent with who and what you are at your core. And it's only who and what you are at your core that truly is empowered to deal with whatever is the noise, the pain, the threat that might be coming at you in real life. We all have this tendency to react. Things come to us out of the blue. It's just a fact of life. And when this happens, we have a tendency to react in different and sometimes in multiple levels, so that when bad news hits us, we might have a chemical and physiological response to that. We might realize a rise in our blood pressure or a spike in our adrenaline flow, or we might get that ugly, gutty feeling in the pit of our stomach that just frightens us to pieces. And in the worst case scenario, it could develop into an actual anxiety attack or put us into some level of shock. And it's documented there are cases that when confronted with a crisis, some people literally just realize vertigo and faint on the spot. And we could have a reaction on an emotional level as well. So when the bad stuff starts to come in at us, we might react with feelings of depression, alienation, loneliness, isolation, and of course, the granddaddy of them all, fear. Each and every one of us has realized fear, real fear, many times in the course of our own lives. And the principle of turning away is the first step in trying to gain control over the situation, because to turn away is not to give up on a situation. To turn away is not to hide in the sand. To turn away is, in effect, to exert and control over a situation and determine what it is yours to do in an orderly, healthy, effective manner. It's not a step that paralyzes us or freezes us from doing what needs to be done. When you react to a situation out of panic and frenzy, you, in effect, again, have given that situation a sense of control over you, and that's when you really lose power over the situation, and you develop a sense of helplessness. You know, a frenzy sets in, exactly as it did with that sailor in my opening story. We have a real live example of this, something that just taken place in the last couple of weeks. And I'm talking about the story that was all over the news about the father in the courtroom who charged after Dr. Larry Nassar, the Olympic doctor, who was convicted for abusing so many young women. And the father was there with his daughters, and he charged at him, and he had to be subdued by three of the, I guess, courtroom police that were there. And what happened in that situation is that his pain was so intense and his daughter's pain was so intense that he fell into the mold of reacting instead of acting. And you have to ask the question, what if he had actually gotten to this doctor and gotten a couple licks in? Or if he had been granted by the judge his original request of, give me 5 minutes alone with this guy in a locked room. Or give me, okay, you won't do that, give me a minute alone with him. Would this have alleviated his pain or his daughter's pain? You know, I really don't think so. That healing is going to take a very long, deliberate process that includes a lot of compassion and love and forgiving. It's going to require a process that has to begin with the first step of turning away or taking a breath. We can all empathize with that father, and perhaps many of us can relate to him as well, because we, in our own way, have experienced pain and fear, and on occasion turned it into anger. It's something that happens to us, you know, because we are depressed, because we are isolated, because we are lonely, because we are frightened, we are scared, because we have been minimized, because we feel that we have been dissed. I myself, I wish I had a dollar for every time in my life in which I lost it, only to come back later on when the smoke cleared and realize that I probably owed people a few apologies because I came away with the realization that I was wrong. It's a syndrome that I like to describe as the ready, fire, aim syndrome. You want a crazy example of what I'm talking about? I'll share a short story with you about a guy who walked into a 7-Eleven, and when he got into the store, there on the floor was this lady writhing all over the floor, screaming and hissing to high heaven. And the guy looks at this, and the cashier's just kind of standing there. And he says, what's going on? And the cashier said, we ran out of Purple Berry Blast. It just shows the extent of what could happen. I've had experiences in my limited counseling experiences where people have come to me really in the throes of a catch-22 attitude. Because we sit down with them and they identify their problems and they wholeheartedly believe that they have to find some resolution, some solutions to the things that are plaguing them in their life. And yet at the very same time, they adamantly insist that there are no solutions for the problems in their lives. And so as a result, they have this fear and this worry and this anger and this pain. And all of those just serve to wall up, you know, and prevent any exit from the maze in which they're living. And yet, at the same time, deep within, there's an inner knowing that there's a way out. Or else, why would they have taken the time even to bother with counseling? And so if we, when we're confronted with something, can just muster up even a bit of that opening step of turning away, and we could allow our true inner self to emerge in that situation, then we can make at least small progress, and we could take those same things of worry and fear and hurt and pain and use them as stepping stones, as paths that will lead us out of that maze and into the realization of our own true light. When I was at seminary one morning, all of the students got an email informing us that one of our classmates was awakened in the middle of the night with a phone call advising her that her 12-year-old grandson had been killed. He was murdered at the hands of his own father, the details of which are too brutal to share, too graphic to share, but it was really an unpleasant situation. So a handful of us got together in that morning and we just said, what is ours to do here? You know, do we send her an email, let her know she's in our thoughts? Do we go to her, you know, and offer to be with her and offer hugs to her? Is this a sacred time that we just need to stand back and leave this alone? What should we do? So we decided that three of us would go and just pose the question to her. What would you have us do? Do you want to be left alone? Do you need company? You know, tell us how best we can love you in this situation. And she said to us, the pain that I am feeling now is absolutely the worst pain that I have ever felt in my entire life. I feel like my heart is just literally going to explode. But I want you to stay with me today. I understand that I have to deal with what happened on a whole multitude of levels. But not today. Not for the next several hours. So I want you to be with me. Just talk to me about anything other than that situation. And so that's what we did. We got there late morning and stayed with her into the night. And we talked about the ministerial program. We talked about papers that were due. We critiqued all of the faculty members. And we talked about stupid stuff. And on a couple of occasions, we actually managed to bring a smile to her face. And the next day, she got on a plane to go home to deal with her daughter and her remaining grandson. And then she continued to work on the grief that was filling her heart over the next several days, weeks, and months. But she needed that moment to turn away. We forget sometimes that our thoughts are things, and things occupy space. And there's only room in our heads, really, for one thought at a given time, or maybe a closely related stream of thoughts. And so this process of turning away is about edging that out and allowing other, healthier, more loving thoughts to occupy our brains. In the book, The Lazarus Blueprint, the authors talk about pulling a weed and planting a flower. This past week in our class on Wednesday night, we talked all about denials and affirmations. And pulling a weed and planting a flower is a metaphor exactly for that process. And again, it's important when we deny something, when we enter into a prayer of denial, we're not saying that that reality isn't there, that the bad stuff really is not there. We're not saying that we are not experiencing pain and hurt on some level. But what we are doing by turning away, we are in effect issuing a statement. You know, I see you. I know that you're there. I know that you have the potential to really be hurtful and harmful and to make my life a living hell. But I'm in control. And it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen today anyway. And I'm going to deal with you under my terms and under my conditions. And I'm going to use you to come out stronger on the other end. And in effect, we have cleared the space, plant a flower. A new, vibrant, colorful thought in our life. A whole new level of consciousness at the tail end of that process. I think we could also look at turning away in terms of honoring the Sabbath. The Sabbath is not just, you know, a day of the week that we isolate to remember the Lord. The Sabbath is a state of consciousness that involves turning away, because the Sabbath is what allows us to look at what's around us and turn away from it and plant in there the thought, the realization that it's all about God. 100% of the time, everywhere. The Sabbath is a state of mind that allows us to commune with our own deep Christ essence. Turning away could also be viewed as taking a breath. You know, we use the breathing thing in meditation all the time. We invite people to fall into the rhythm of your own breath. You know, allow yourself to realize as you're taking in oxygen that goes into your lungs, and then the blood pops that oxygen to every vibrant living cell in your entire body. And so when we use the analogy, because in taking a breath, we imbibe, we drink in spirit. And that also flows into our entire existence, you know, right to the heart of our very souls. When I had to do my first chapel service at school, I'm not exaggerating, I was really like that sailor in that opening story that I shared. I was just really freaking out. And 20 minutes before the service was to begin, one of my classmates grabbed hold of me and she said, "Boy, I could just see it in your face. You're a mess." And like the captain did to the sailor, she said, "You need to calm down. You need to relax. You need to let it go. One way or another, it's going to be fine." And it was her kind words to me that really allowed me to get on top of the situation and officiate at that first chapel service. Every one of us, deep within, has a Martha and a Mary. Metaphysically, they are the intuitive aspects of our being. And they are there to send little messages to us, little spiritual SOSs, if you will, to alert us about things in order to give us ample time and according to divine order to deal with them in a meaningful fashion. And sometimes these might show up as, you know, that queasy feeling in the pit of your tummy. Or it might be a thought that pops in your head just as you put your head down on the pillow and try to get a good night's sleep. And it's like, got to spend some time on this. And it all might be triggered very innocently by a word, by some passerby. Or it could come to us more dramatically by a very painful, spooky medical diagnosis. But the point is, we need to allow that intuition within us to click in, to not panic, because that is the only way that we could begin the process and effectively maintain control, not to feed our ego or to make things all that right immediately in the physical world, but allow us to center and focus on who and what we truly are in the light of the divine Christ that is part of our very being for each and every one of us. And all God's people say, Amen.